Awesome. We have this next 3 weeks on this subject, trusted, and I'm really, really excited about this. We've been planning this for months. Now, how many of you were here last week? Just put your hands up so I can see. Okay, a good number of you. We celebrated our third birthday. If you weren't here, it's worth catching up. You can go online and listen to the message there, the pivot. Because we talked last week about the fact that Jesus' vision for the church and Jesus' mission for the world, well, it pivots on our decision. You actually have a part to play. If you think that being a Christian is simply about turning up to church, just sitting in the seat, taking part in the proceedings, and that's it, you just need to hear this message really, really loud and clear. That God has chosen you, that God has called you, that God has trusted you. And there's something that you can do, and if you don't do it, it won't get done. But if you do this, then God will do things that you couldn't possibly begin to dream about. And we're going to base this around a particular parable that Jesus told. It's probably my favorite parable. If there's a parable that represents my life, the one that I want over my gravestone, hopefully not for a couple of years, then it's this one. This is kind of my life story that Jesus told. Just need to give a little bit of background for parables. If you're not sure about faith, if you're here, maybe you've been brought along, maybe you weren't expecting to be here, but someone asked you, invited you, bribed you, emotionally blackmailed you to be here. They said they had cake and donuts. You just need to know about parables. The thing about a parable is not a puzzle. Everyone say, a parable is not a puzzle. In a puzzle, everything means something. So everything has to be interpreted. It's the Da Vinci Code. It's kind of got to be worked out. But with a parable, it's more like a joke with a punchline. So a joke has a setup and has a punchline. You don't worry too much about the ins and outs of how the joke works or what the setup is. It's all about the payoff. It's all about the punchline. So a joke is like this. A horse walks into a bar. The barman says, "So, why the long face?" Hilarious joke. Just like the other joke, a polar bear walks into a bar. He says, "I'd like a gin and tonic." The barman says, "Sure, but why the long pause?" Yeah, long. The thing is, come on, laugh. Thank you. Thanks for patronizing me. The thing about a joke is that it's all about the punchline. If you start to say, "Well, what on earth is a horse doing in a bar?" the whole thing falls to pieces because that's not what it's about. Or if you say, "Well, a polar bear can't talk, and if it talked, people would be terrified. They'd be running out of the bar. There'd be pandemonium. What kind of a bartender serves a polar bear anyway?" You know, if you go too hard and try to interpret every little bit, you miss the point, because the point is the punchline. Now, Jesus' parables, they're not like puzzles where this means that and that equates to this and this represents that. No. That's not how it works. It's like a joke. It has a setup and then it has a payoff. Horse walks into a bar. That's the setup. And then the payoff is something that you weren't expecting, something that takes you by surprise, something that is interesting and unusual and kind of turns things on its head and makes you laugh. He's got a long face because he's a horse, but it's also an idiomatic expression, meaning that someone's down in the dumps, which traditionally bar men were good at picking up and trying to console you in your sorrows with the drink. So that's the payoff. Now, for a joke to work, you kind of have to understand a little bit about the cultural context. So you need to know that, polar bear has long paws. But paws is also another way of saying a break in a sentence, but it's spelt differently, but it sounds the same. So you've got to be able to understand that, or you've got to know what a bar is, or you've got to understand what, asking for a drink is in a bar. You've got to have some kind of cultural framework. And the problem with some of Jesus's parables, and the reason why some of you, maybe you did it at school, you did it in RE, they didn't really have that big an impact on you, is because you don't necessarily understand the cultural thing going on behind it. What's happening? What's in the story? If you don't understand the whole concept of bars and gins and tonics and polar bears, you won't laugh as hilariously as you all laughed at my incredible joke. So part of what I want to do tonight is two things. First of all, I want to tell you my favorite parable, the story that Jesus told with the most incredible payoff and punchline. But secondly, just unpack a little bit about what makes the story tick. But The caution is, it's not a puzzle. Everyone say, it's not a puzzle. Turn to the person next to you and say, it's not a puzzle. It's like a joke. It has a punchline. It's not a puzzle. Don't read too much into it. Just get the point of the joke. Stop asking about the horse and where was the rider. Just get the punchline. I'm about to tell you a parable. And actually, this is a parable that for a while I had hassle with and problems with. Because, you know, sometimes if you try to just make it like a puzzle, you lose the importance of it and you get hung up. But this is a parable that Jesus told, and it's a really important parable that Jesus told. And Jesus is the master storyteller, master communicator, is able to bring in great truth in a simple, simple, memorable way that just blows your brain. And what he does with this is that it's one of the very last parables that he shares with his disciples. It's moments, days, hours before he's going to be crucified. And he's been with these guys for 3 years, 3 years. And he's had them following him. And he knows that he's about to leave them. And says, listen, gather in. I want to tell you such a story that you will never forget this. You'll never forget this. It'll get so much into your brain. And it will inform how you live and how you do life and how you do your faith after I've been taken away from you. It's called the Parable of the Talents. It's recorded by three of the Gospels, but this is Matthew's take. Jesus says this, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who'd received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 talents more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who'd received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who'd received 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me. Everyone read that together. You entrusted me. Again, with feeling. You entrusted me. You entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come, share your master's happiness. The man with 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good, faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who'd received 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. Now, this is the point in the story where everybody bursts out laughing. I mean, Jesus is telling this to the disciples, and this is kind of, it's like a pre-punchline. And when he says this line, Master, I knew you're a hard man, everyone bursts out laughing. They're killing themselves. They're doubling up. They think this is hilarious, and I'll explain why later. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So, you knew that I harvest where I've not sown and gather where I've not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have, will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, it's a story. It's a parable. It makes a point. It has a punchline. It is not a puzzle. You get into trouble if you read this as a puzzle where everything means something. You start off and you say, well, God's the master. Does that mean we're all servants? But didn't Jesus tell his disciples that they're no longer servants? They're friends. Is that how God sees me? I'm just one of his employees. He can hire me, fire me. He can sack me. He can elevate me. No, 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 no. You're getting too far into it. A horse walks into a bar. Or you're saying, you mean the servant that doesn't do well? If I don't do well, then I'm going to be cast? into outer darkness, weeping, gnashing. Are you saying that God is so harsh that he'll send me to hell? Is this about being sent to hell? You're talking about hell. And some of you, you're not used to faith. You come in and there's weeping, there's gnashing of teeth. And you, this is like your worst nightmare. Christians, judging. No. It's not about hell. It's not about being servants. This is a parable, a story, and it's all about one thing and one thing only. And that's answering the question, what stops people from doing great things for God? What stops us from doing great things for God? Because God has great things for you to do. God didn't bring you here just to make up the numbers, just to pad out the rows. God has great things, powerful things, amazing things, earth-shattering, world-changing, city-shaping, friend awakening things for you to do. But what stops you? And it's like Jesus is saying, guys, I want you to get this because you need to know that there's great things for you. There's destiny for you. You are important. You are special. You have a place, a role to fulfill, a part to play, something amazing to do. But it is possible that you will miss that. And it's very important that we know what stops us from doing great things. That's why you have a servant that messes up. And he's sent out into a place of regret. And, you know, when you just really regret how you lived and what you did, and I wish I'd done that. It's not about hell. It's about missing out. You don't want to miss out on what God has for your life. You don't want to go through life and never really achieve what you could have achieved. So what stops us from doing great things for God? But again, you need to know a little bit of the culture. You need to understand a horse walks into a bar. You need to understand what's going on and what the framework is. Because this was my big problem. When I was a kid and I grew up in church, you know, out of my mother, into church. And for a long time, I was kind of slightly frightened by this parable because of the, you know, if I don't do good, God's going to throw me out, gnashing teeth. I don't even know how to gnash my teeth, but I don't want it. It sounds awful. Darkness. He's, you know, and what's the big deal? I mean, come on. Maybe because when I was a kid, I went to Sunday school and they would have a little felt board and little felt Jesus, felt disciples. And these guys with the talent. And the talent was always just kind of a little gold-colored stone. You know, like a gold-colored stone. And sometimes they'd do drama sketches and the youth group would come on and that's a parable of the talents. And here's five gold-colored stones. Here's two gold-colored stones. Here's one gold. And it's like, hey, okay. So it was a gold-colored stone. He didn't do anything with it. Chill out. Why the big drama about this? I mean, do you know, one day I found out what a talent means. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to explain it to you, and this is really, really interesting. Okay, back in the day, first century, if you were, say, a servant, and you worked an honest day's wage, at the end of that day, they would give you a gold coin, a bit like my pirate coins from last week, give you a gold coin, and that was a denarius. Probably not gold, to be frank, because it was one day's wages, okay, unless you were working for Herod or something. But your average wage, one denarius. One denarius equals one day's work. Now, if you took one denarius and added it to nine other denarius, you got 10 denarius, and then you make 50, and then you make 100. If you take, say, 250 denarius, that's about a day's wage, you keep adding to it. Okay, if you get 10,000 denarius coins, that's like a lifetime of salary, you get one talent. One talent, talent is a measure, just like pound is a measure. Talent of silver or talent of gold equates to 10,000 days work. In other words, one talent is a lifetime's wage. Two talents, 20,000 days work. Five talents, 50,000 days work. That's lifetime upon lifetime upon lifetime upon lifetime upon lifetime of work. In today's money, regular kind of pay, you get your plumber around or your builder around, say £100 a day, that equates to one talent equals £1 million. Two talents, £2 million. Five talents, £5 million. In other words, this master, he brought his servants around, and instead of giving them a day's wage, one denarius, He gave one of them 5 talents, 50,000, 5 million pounds. 5 million pounds. And he says, listen, I'm going away. Here's 5 million. I trust you. I trust you. Do with it what you want. It is yours. You can do with it. It's my money, but I'm trusting it to you. Even the least able, he gave 1 million pounds. That's why they all laugh when Jesus talks about the reaction of the third servant. Because the first servant comes along and says, hey, you gave me 5 million. I mean, another 5 million. I got 10 million. And the master says, nice one. Great. Here, keep the 10 million. You've been faithful with just a few things. I'm going to give you so much more. 10 million. It's loose pocket change. I've got great stuff. Come into partnership with me. Enter into my master's joy. Second one, 2 million. I made it 4 million. Ah, nice. Peanuts, though. I'm going to give you some real wealth. And then the third servant comes along and says, I know that you're a hard man. He's not a hard man. And Jesus is saying, God is not a hard man. He's not a hard man. Vin Diesel is a hard man. Jason Statham is a hard man. But your Father in heaven, he's good, he's good, he's good. He's not a hard man. And this thing about you harvest where you do not, it's nonsense. What is it that stops us from doing great things for God? In a word, it's fear. He says, I was afraid. I was afraid. If you don't know who God is, and if you don't know how good God is, you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems. If you're here and you're not a believer, or you're not used to church, or you got burnt by church in the past, or you found it boring, or you turned away, or you just didn't want to have anything to do with it, or it was your family and you didn't want to get involved, it's easy for us to have a negative view of God. That God, and like, you know, I always talk about my PE teacher being my role model for God, but some of us, we do think of God as like that PE teacher in the sky, golden tracksuit, whistle around his neck, blowing it, making us do horrible sports in our pants because we forgot our sports kit. We think that God is like that. We think that God is a cosmic policeman. We think that he's harsh, hard. But Jesus says, you have no idea how good he is. He is so good. He's a good, good father. He's gracious and he gives you stuff. But fear will hold you back. And some of you in your Christian faith, you haven't got too far because fear. And we heard the story of Steve and Mark. And Steve had to overcome fear. What happens if my friend rejects me? What happens if I lose my reputation? What happens if people misinterpret? What happens if this all goes terribly wrong? And fear can stop you. Fear is a cage that will constrict you. And unless we get out of that cage, we will never accomplish what God wants us to accomplish. And this guy, this third servant, he buries the million underground. It wasn't an unusual thing. In fact, Jesus told a parable about a person that bought a field and just so happened to find buried treasure. You know, it was an insecure economy. It was a land that had been invaded by an alien nation. And so burying money underground, it was considered safe but boring, dull, but probably not the worst thing that you could do. At least the money would still be there unless you died, forgot about it, and someone sold your land. So he does this kind of boring option. If you want to come to church, be a Christian, and do the boring option, go find a different church. We're not here to do the boring option. We're here to do the step out of the cage, and let it all hang on our appreciation that God is good. He can be trusted. It's not easy overcoming fear. It's not easy getting out of that cage. I remember when I was 25 years old and my friend said to me, hey, Philip, we've got a great idea. I said, what is it? And we lived together and there was us, the lads are all together, lads, Loud and Larry. He says, Philip, we're going to do this thing. We're going to do a bungee jump. Are you in? I said, yeah, I'm in. I love to do a bungee jump because it seemed like a great idea at the time. The nearer that I got to it, the worse that it got, mostly because of the people. And I had to tell people because we were going to do it for charity. You know, that was like our excuse. So I'm telling people, and people are like, you know, I saw that stuff. I saw a video, and the cord got wrapped around the guy's neck when he did the rebound. You got to watch that. I'm like, okay. Someone else said, yeah, did you know the main cause of accidents and injuries on bungee jumps is detached retina? You don't come back from that one. You just, your eyes at the bottom. I'm like, okay, right, well, I'm committed now. And my mum, I rang up. I said, Mum, I'm doing a bungee jump. She just cried on the other end of the phone. And then eventually, through her tears, when she couldn't talk me out of it, she said, well, you will be careful, won't you? I'm like, Mum, I'm going to go 200 feet in the air and jump out of a platform with a rubber band tied to my ankles. What am I going to do to be careful? Go down in slow motion? Of course I'm not going to be careful. I'm going to be ridiculous and risky. But we got to it. And I'll never forget, it was actually in Cirencester, the Cirencester water park. And we drove over, parked my car in the car park. And there's three of us lads who were all doing it together, all G-ing one another on. Has anyone here done a bungee jump? Some of you, yeah, a few of you, yeah. Idiots. I take that back. I shouldn't say that on the stage. But you, if you've done it, you have to fill in a form. And there's a guy at the bottom, and they've got a clipboard, and it's like, I will not sue if I am killed. Sign here, date here, initial here, thank you. And then you go like lambs to the slaughter. So it's safe to say that by the time you get to the actual thing, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. And I'm man enough to say, it's a little bit nerve-wracked. And you go, and finally, it's my turn. And it was above this kind of water park, and it is. It's 200 feet up. So you walk into this cage. It's a cage, but it's only got three sides. It's got a bottom, it's got sides, it's got a back, but it's got no front. And you go into the cage, and the cage is attached to a big crane. And the crane takes you up 200 feet. And I remember, I'll never forget this, there's these two guys in the cage with you, and it's their job to attach the thing. And it's just really disconcerting because, you know, one of the guys is, you know, offers you like a last cigarette. And the other guy's got a big black hood on. He's chanting in Latin. And it's just really, really disconcerting. He's got a big Bible. And what happens is they say, right, what we want you to do is we want you to hold on to the sides and grip on with all your might. I said, it's not going to be a problem. They said, now, what we want you to do is we want you to lean out, lean above. And I'm thinking, whew, I can see my house from here. And then they said, look, it's been a little bit dull because no one's screamed as they've gone down. And, you know, it's funny. You think you're going to scream, but actually, you're literally too frightened to scream. He said, no one screamed. So just to liven it up, we've been doing this all day long. Could you scream? I said, I think that won't be a problem. So I'm leaning over on the edge, and I'm in the cage. And do you know what the cage is called? The cage is called the comfort zone. The comfort zone has got a great view. It's already a great experience. If I'd just gone up and stayed in the comfort zone, it's probably worth all the hassle. It has been great fun, but it is the comfort zone. And I stay within the cage. There's actually nothing stopping me except my own fear. But we live in the comfort zone. We live in what we know. We live in what's easy. We live in what we see everybody else doing. And fear keeps us in the comfort zone. But if you want to do the jump, if you want to have the thrill, there's no two ways about it. You have to let go. You have to go out of the comfort zone. You have to release. You go from the comfort zone into the commitment zone. The commitment zone is where you are totally and utterly committed, and all your hope is on this thing that you're doing, that you can't help yourself, you can't save yourself, but you trust that a rope is there that will secure you. Honest as I stand here before you, this is what I said to the guys. I said to them, I said, are you sure that you've attached the cord correctly? Because I was terrified. And I was terrified. I thought, I don't want to die because someone forgot to clasp my ankles into the thing. And they're like, oops, sorry. And they just kind of, semi-laughed and semi-tried to reassure me. They said, don't worry. You can trust us. We've been doing this all day long. We've only lost 5 people so far. So they say 3, 2, 1 and release. So I'm there. I'm hanging out. 3, 2, 1. I release. I go down, and because I said to the guys, I said, I'm going to shout, I'm going to scream, and I went through with that. But honestly, it is so terrifying that halfway through, I just couldn't scream anymore. I just needed all my attention on my terror. I just went like this, ah! And faster, faster, faster. And then the amazing thing, do you know the bungee jump? It's not the jumping that is the fun. It's not the jumping that's the thrill. The jump is terrifying. What is exhilarating is the rebound. You hit the ground. You detach your retina. Still can't see any of you. And then you bounce up, and suddenly you're not facing down, you're facing up. I did the Superman pose. I'm like, da, 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 da. And you know, it was such a cliche. But I did it, and I was absolutely thrilled. But you don't get the thrill in the comfort zone. In the comfort zone, you just get a view. And some of you in your faith, all you're getting is a view. Sure, it's a good view. Sure, it's better than being on the ground. But there's so much more that God has for you. But you've got to step out of the comfort zone and into the commitment zone. And that is what separates these guys from the servant that was crippled by fear, because he didn't realize how good his master was. And these guys, they had this thing. And these three words that the servants say to the master when they have that day of reckoning, these three words might just be the most important words that you can hear, certainly in this phase of your life. These three words, you trusted me. Everyone say, you trusted me. First servant comes along. It's like, seriously, I couldn't believe it. I'm just a servant. I get paid one denarius every day. If I didn't have any expenses and I saved up all my life's wages, I wouldn't get anywhere close to approaching what you gave me. You gave me 50,000 days' wages. You gave me 5 million. You trusted me. What did you see in me? What made you take that risk? How did you know I wouldn't just abscond and go away? But you trusted me. You trusted me. All my life, people have told me, trust in God, believe in God, have faith in God. And Jesus says, yes, yes, that's absolutely key. That's absolutely crucial. But there's something even better. That's what makes Christianity such a buzz, such a thrill, so exhilarating, that God says, yeah, you trust me, you believe in me, you have faith in me, but I trust you. I believe in you. I have faith in you. And the master says to these servants, I believe in you. You can do this. You got this. I have faith. I have trust. I have absolute confidence in you. And because of this, because this servant, because this individual, they knew that the master was so good and so gracious and so kind. They said, because you did that, it gave me the confidence to get out of the comfort zone. And I went into the commitment zone. And I worked hard and I gave what you had given me and I invested it and I made something of it and I multiplied it. Because God, my friends, is not in the maintenance business. He's in the multiplication business. The third servant says, I maintained what you gave me. Still got it. Still got it. Here you are. You gave me this workplace and here it is, exactly as I found it. You gave me this set of friendships. And here it is, exactly as I found them. You gave me this family. You gave me this flatmate. You gave me this street. You gave me this gym membership. And here it is, here it is, here it is. I have not harmed it, but it's not multiplied. It's just been maintained. There are some churches, and you know, all that happens is just what they have is maintained. And actually, yeah, credit where credit's due. That's not an easy thing in this day and age when people are flocking away from the church. But God says, I trusted you. I trusted you with this thing. I gave you a kicking venue. You don't think I put anybody into We the Curious. I gave you balconies. What did you do with it? Well, we passed through and here it is exactly as we found it. No, there's a servant that said, you trusted me. And so I went and I did something with it. And it's not the fact that he makes another 5 million. It's the fact that he went for it. And the master is just absolutely bowled over. Because this is the thing. The parable that Jesus wants to tell is the parable of the 16 talents. Jesus would love to tell a story, a parable. He'd love to put this, Matthew, Mark, Luke, you record this one, the parable of the 16 talents. Once upon a time, master, 5 talents, 2 talents, 1 talent, that's 8 talents. At the end, he came back, 10 talents, 4 talents, 2 talents, 16 talents, everyone doubled. That's what Jesus wants to tell, the story. But there's one person, and he says, here's your talent. It's exactly as it was. No multiplication, no change. And you know what really gets me about this story? It's like, but why didn't the master do something? Why didn't the master step in? Because that's a talent that's been lost. There could have been an extra talent. It could have been the parable of the 16 talents instead of the parable of the 15 talents. One guy didn't do the job. So maybe the master makes it up for them. No. That talent that could have become 2 talents forever stays as it was. And it's like, you mean God? You trust me with some stuff, and if I don't do anything, there's no plan B? And Jesus says, mm-hmm. You mean I got some friends, or I got some workmates, I got some colleagues, I got some flatmates. If I don't share, take a risk, get into the commitments of with them, you don't have a backup plan? No, I don't. I put you in that flat. I put you in that workplace. I put you in that situation. I put you in that scenario. And what we want and what I'm living my whole life for, dear God, is one day that I will hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. That's what we want. Now, what we're going to do, and I want to tell you this, and then we're going to pray, then we're going to end in worship. I want to tell you this, and this is the point. This is kind of an introduction. Next week, we're going to talk about the good things that God gives us. And then the third week, Sam Cook, the new kid on the block, he's going to come and talk about the good news that Jesus has trusted us with. Because make no mistake, Jesus has trusted you. Everyone say to, out loud, Jesus has trusted me. He's trusted you with some amazing things. If you don't do anything with it, nothing will be done with it. But this is an introduction, because what we're about to do is we're about to embark on one of the single greatest, most sustained periods of church that you can bring your friend to that we have ever done before. And what I need from you is I need you to be the next between friends story. I want to be able to have you, and we won't necessarily put you in front of the crowd, but you know what I'm saying. I want you to be able to talk about your friend. What happens if Steve didn't talk to Mark outside the third floor men's toilets that are now so famous in the annals of Metro Law? What happens if he doesn't have that conversation? Is Mark here? No. In 5 weeks' time, Steve, right over there, will baptize Mark. And we will all clap and we'll release the confetti cannon. Without Steve doing what Steve did, no confetti cannon, no towel, no Mark. You say, but God is all-powerful. God's trusting. God bet all on you. And the angels gather around. And they're like, oh, master, you can't put it all on them. And the master, the father, the good, good father, he says, no, I trust them. And I think they're going to be faithful. They're going to be worthy of my trust. So here's a few things that we've got that you can just make the decision. What am I going to do with these opportunities that are put before me? After we finish this series, Trusted, we're going to have a special event, and we're calling it What's the Point? So this is coinciding with the kind of end of Freshers Week, all the students coming back. We're going to do a massive social media campaign. Matt Miles is going to dress up in a Riddler onesie and go around Bristol throwing question marks at people, shouting from the top of Cabot Tower, doing crazy viral things. It's all going to go. And we're going to do Instagram and Facebook campaigns. And we're going to have this evening, What's the Point? Money, sex, power, friendships, all of that stuff. But what's the point? We want to pack this place. You have an opportunity to bring your friend. A great event. Bring them. But what will you do? Comfort zone, commitment zone. After that one-off, we're going into a series called Five Reasons Why. And so we're going to put on five events. We're going to talk about five reasons why it makes absolute sense to believe in God. And again, if you bring your friend, they will be impacted. If you don't bring your friend, they will not be impacted. There's an opportunity. There's a chance. There's something to be grasped here. And so we're going to do this. One of the five reasons is going to be baptism. So we're going to have five baptisms, five reasons why. We're going to have a panel, five people, five reasons why. We're going to go through the very, very compelling evidence why it makes sense to believe in God, looking at science and the universe and the person of Jesus, the resurrection. These are great things. And if you don't do something with this, you'll be kicking yourself because people are going to come in and you want them to rejoice because their friends have come to faith, but you want to be able to have your friends too. After that, we've got Alpha, which launches on October the 10th. And again, an amazing opportunity to bring your friends. But here's something. Suppose you have no friends. You have no workplace. You have no one who you influence. They all say no. You have the rebuttals like Steve. You get depressed and cry into your beer and don't come to church. What can you do? Next Saturday, we have a prayer event, Metro Prayer. And every third Saturday, we gather outside here just by the fountains. We meet for 45 minutes, an hour, and we just pray. Because the Father says, but I gave you prayer. I gave you the ability to change history by praying, by asking. That's not so difficult. And the angels, again, they're saying, yeah, but Lord, what if they don't pray? What if they don't bring the resources? What if they don't invite us in? God says, I believe in them. I trust in them. I have faith in them. So here's our big idea. God is a good and gracious God, and he believes in us. We just need to move from comfort zone to commitment zone to prove faithful to his trust. Let's pray. I want you to be quiet. I want you to take a moment now. And I want you to think, who has Jesus trusted me with? We're going to unpack some of these things in the next couple of weeks. But right now, think of a friend, think of a person, think of a relationship. Who has God trusted me with? I think about my neighbors. I think about my in-laws. And some of you, you need to make a commitment to yourself right now. It might be just as simple as, hey, I'm going to show up with Philip for the prayer thing and keep him company so that he doesn't pray on his own like a poor, sad loser. But for others of you, you say, no, I'm going to start praying. I'm going to ask that God would help me. I'm going to start inviting people and I'm going to take the hits and the rejections and the disappointments, but I'm going to go for it. I'm out of the comfort zone. I'm into the commitment zone and I'm going to fly with Jesus. Father, I pray right now that you'd help us. Lord, I pray that this message wouldn't be taken as condemning, but it would be taken as encouragement. I thank you that this is the message that you gave your disciples. You can do great things. God believes in you. God trusts in you. And I want to pray that no matter what we've heard or what other people say about you, that we would know that you're a good, good Father, that you are good in all your ways, that you're perfect in all your ways, that you love us with all of your heart, that you are for us, that you're behind us, that you want to fill us. And I want to pray that we would grab a hold and take the opportunities and the resources that you place before us in the name of Jesus. In the name of Jesus. Amen.